So yeah, so President Trump called about talking about the Senate, talking about some of the specific senators and some of my colleagues, and you're reading about some of them today. I've noticed he's been endorsing, and you know, he feels really good about the party and the party's affection for him, and Republican senators seeking his counsel and seeking his endorsement in very meaningful ways. And you know, you're not seeing, other than Mitch McConnell's, you know, couple of his comments and speeches, his speech on the floor, you're not seeing a lot of blowback on Donald Trump from Republican senators. Now, the impeachment vote certainly separated the, you know, the men from the boys, so to speak, and the women from the girls. But he, all in all, I had the sense from the president that he's pretty optimistic about the party and, you know, his standing in the party, and as he should, he has changed the trajectory of the party. For a long time, regardless of what he decides to do personally, he is having a tremendous impact. And some of it, Scott and Steve, on the philosophy of the Republican Party. And I think in a good way.
But I don't know. If you had to percentage-wise say, okay, the Republican Party, and I agree with you. By the way, I happened to see President Trump down at Mar-a-Lago a few weeks ago. He, of course, remembered me as the North Dakota talk show guy, not by name, obviously, but he's wanted me to know that Kevin Cramer was his best friend in the Senate. You tell everybody in North Dakota, nobody fought harder for us than Kevin Cramer. He wanted everybody to know that, and also that he would be a candidate in 2024, and was very strong about that. But don't you think if we said Donald Trump, okay, there's every elected Republican, there's the party apparatus, how many of them are with you, how many are against him? It'd be like 60-40 in favor, maybe 70-30. There's
still a lot of cleanup
in aisle five of the party, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's much higher. Yeah, I mean, you know, people continually ask me, reporters in Washington particularly, well, what role do you think Donald Trump will have in the, you know, or has in the Republican Party's future? And I say, whatever role he wants. I mean, that's not like a political statement. That's just obvious. He has the affection of the party, and he has, in many respects, the intellectual interest of the party. And that, by that I mean, we're not the globalist party we were. That's not to say we don't understand globalism or that we don't still like free trade. We love free trade. But he has clearly changed the rules of our position, and that is that we're going to be an America First globalist party, if I might put it that way. And and anybody that thinks that they're going to be an old-fashioned Chamber of Commerce Republican that acquiesces to every other country that we negotiate with are kidding themselves. That's not what we're going to go back to. So, no, we owe a lot to Donald Trump, and that's more him being on the ballot. The thing that's different and the thing that's missing, you guys, I think we all have to admit, is what Donald Trump brought to the fight was the fight itself. In other words, he didn't overly intellectualize things. He didn't complicate things. He spoke plainly and clearly in an understandable fashion that gave people confidence. And his, what some people would say, lack of eloquence, I would call it just his directness. Even sometimes in the form of maybe crass or even vulgarities, people didn't always like it, but they believed it. Do you know what I'm saying? There's an authenticity about him that I think a lot of people don't see in a politician like me, because I might not be as
well spoken,
or I might choose my words more carefully, right? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. You hit it right on the head. That's the way it is. People believed him. It was, like I said, he was our last best hope. You know, as far as any president, Democrat or Republican, he was the one that you knew what he was thinking. You didn't have to guess what he was thinking.
And you know what? He had a day-to-day way in his presidency of doing things and saying things that the vast majority of, you know, God-fearing conservatives in North Dakota wouldn't do on their worst day, right? But you know what? They forgave it for the following reason. He fought like the third monkey on the ramp to Noah's Ark when it was already raining. And I think what I hear Steve saying is that's what we want from you and your colleagues. We get it from you, Kevin. We do. We don't get it from as many of your colleagues as I think we need to win. I just don't think we do. We just don't fight as well. And I don't know if that's in the DNA of the Republican Party that, hey, we work for a living and once in a while throw our hat in the ring for a political office, where Democrats do this. It's a blood sport to them. They'll always fight harder because it consumes them. They want to control people. They have the, you know, so am I wrong, Steve?
Yeah.
Is that the kind of fight you want from Republicans? And
you're absolutely right. That's what concerns me, is that I was visiting with a gentleman, and I don't even know if he's Democrat or Republican, but this was kind of back when the I think it was the second impeachment or whatever, but he was speaking about the hearings and stuff like that, and he said that, you know, the Democrats, they were like a well-oiled machine, and the Republicans looked like a junior high class. So, you know, that I'm like I said.
So
I'm
how do you take the best of Trump, Kevin?
It seems exactly that way.
So we're going to give Kevin the last word in this, and then I got to ask you one other thing about the president's call. But, you know, okay. Is that level of fight within the Republican Party today as we sit here?
Oh, it is, Scott, and I think you see it. You know, I know a lot of people have problems with Mitch McConnell, and clearly he was frustrated with the president at the end. But this is a guy that's got ice in his veins. Now, you're not going to hear him on the Senate floor going berserk. He's quite eloquent on the Senate floor, but he makes a lot of sense. So you may not see that personality trait that you're looking for, but also remember this, you guys, and this is not an excuse, but it is a fact. Joe Biden can stumble, stammer, not finish a sentence, you know, fall down trying to get upstairs, forget the names of his wife, his sister, his Secretary of Defense, forget the names of agencies that are under his purview. I mean, all day long, and you're never going to hear about it on the media except maybe one or two references by Fox or Newsmax. That is the reality we live with. The media are going to take the worst of Donald Trump and play it to the hilt, and they're going to take the worst of Joe Biden and pretend it doesn't exist. That's a major problem for us as well, and that's not going to change. We just have to.
And it doesn't change. You're absolutely right. Steve, I appreciate your call very much.
I do.
Call
too.
Again.
I really
enjoyed
do.
The conversation. Yeah, thanks, Steve. Last question for you.
Yeah, thank you.
What
very
else
much.
Did Donald Trump.
Thank
you. Yeah. You bet, Steve. Take care. Last quick question. I know you got to go, Kevin. What else did Donald Trump say? Is he watching this border crisis as he's going back to the border, for instance? He talked about that. And what else did he talk about?
Well, we talked about a number of things. You know, a lot of he asked about Chris, of course. One of his favorite Senate spouses, because, of course, as you know, she had to be talked into it, and it's a rich story. But he talked about the crisis at the border and the wall. And if I might just say, he was one of the things he pointed out very specifically to me. He said, "You know, I don't think I ever met that Tommy Fisher guy, and you know, we took a lot of heat for a while there, both of us, but he said he turned out to be our very best wall builder. He lines up his machines like, you know, in military fashion, and he puts it down in very, you know, deliberate and well-planned ways." He said, "We're just really proud of the work he did." So it was really, really nice of him to raise that issue. I mean, I didn't call him. He called me unsolicited. And but just know, guys, he's very, very engaged, and he's happy to be engaged with all of us. He talked a little bit about the election, but we didn't dwell on that. There's nothing to dwell on. But he did talk about state legislatures, and that's an area where we talked a fair bit about these state legislatures and them getting, you know, making sure we don't repeat this mistake again state by state. And by mistake again, I mean by, you know, this wide open vote by mail nonsense and multiple weeks to vote and not having voter identification, those kinds of things. So, I sensed he was, you know, in a pretty good place.
We can't forget, by the way, besides the state legislatures, the counties even, on election integrity. We had a conversation this week with Mike Montplaisir, who is now director of finance, but elections in Cass County, most populous county in North Dakota, obviously. And he said that he personally and the county was receiving pressure from the city of Fargo to move to mail-in balloting. So, I mean, we go down to literally that level, the cities wanting all mail-in voting in Cass County, being pressured by Arlette Preston, a flaming radical liberal on the city commission. So that battle goes more than even state legislatures, doesn't it?
Boy, does it ever. And you know, one of the problems is, and I've said this many times, and people want to take me on it, but I'm very confident of this. North Dakota was one of the very, very early adapters of mail-in voting. We've done it in the majority of our counties, I believe, at this point. Very liberal, wide-open mail-in voting. And part of why we do that is because of our the sparsity of our population in a lot of these places, the difficulty in finding people to work at the polls on election day. And so rather than having the good old-fashioned vote by mail if you're going to be absent, you know, we just made mail-in balloting wide open. And we do that because we trust each other. And we do it because in these small counties where there aren't a lot of people and there's a lot of distance between places, we know everybody. So even voting by mail has more integrity than it does. But it does open the door to mischief. And especially, Scotty, when you throw in what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats want, and that is this